Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Jim, good news, bad news, crazy news for conservatives. We start with the good, although if you talk to some of the gun rights groups, this is not good news. They say it's just a trap to get the votes needed to start debate on gun control legislation. But the news out of the Senate on Tuesday was from Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid saying he is not going to bring forward an assault weapons ban, at least in the initial version of gun control legislation.
And I'm not going to try to put something on the floor that won't succeed. I want something that will succeed. I think the worst of all worlds would be to bring something to the floor and it dies there.
Dianne Feinstein, of course, is the champion of the assault weapons ban. She says she's confident she'll get an amendment vote on this. And more good news is that Harry Reid doesn't even think she has 40 votes to get even simple majority support for that. But here's Feinstein waxing frenetically about the horror that will afflict this nation if she doesn't get her vote.
It's aimed to protect children, to protect schools and malls. It's aimed to dry up the supply of these over time. And it came out on a 10-8 vote of the Judiciary Committee. Not to give me a vote on this would be a major betrayal of trust.
So at least for now, Jim, not only is it very clear that the Democrats don't have the votes, but now Dianne Feinstein and Harry Reid are in a little bit of a spitting match. I'm okay with that.
And it should, they should be. There's an old saying that applies to this circumstance, Greg. guns don't kill assault weapon bans. Senate majority leaders kill assault weapon bans. This will get a vote. I think what I was hoping you were going to play was the comment by Harry Reid that not only does it not have the 60 votes that he felt was necessary for it to be brought to the floor and to begin debate upon it, he thinks it doesn't have 40 votes, which right. means that in addition to having every Republican in opposition, you have considerable chunk of the Democratic caucus not voting for this. So, yeah, she will get a vote on this as an amendment. If Harry Reid's ability to count votes is accurate, it's going to go down in flames. We will see everything else, including the ammunition clip limits and all the other provisions, because which is good news for folks on the right, because it's going to make a lot of very awkward votes for conservative or red state Democrats who generally run as on, you know, gun rights and emphasizing this is how they're different from Nancy Pelosi and Dianne Feinstein and Barack Obama and these sorts of things. My guess is that whatever comes out of the Senate is going to be pretty darn watered down. This is, you know, a testament to both the you know, power and influence of the NRA, as well as to the fact that, look, the NRA's got a lot of money, but if they didn't have votes, nobody would care. Ask President Ross Perot how far money can take in politics. You know, if this was not an issue that a lot of voters voted upon, not really they would, you know, express a certain viewpoint to a pollster, but that is one of the things that actually drove them to the poll, you know, that this is the lens through which they evaluated candidates. You know, this wouldn't have the political power that it does. I think it also says how much the, you know, the overwrought rhetoric of Newtown changed everything. Really, you know, was overwrought and overdramatic and not really accurate. That this is a really awful event, but it didn't mean we had to completely rewrite our Constitution. And so this is, you know, the fact that the gun control movement really believed that they had an absolute huge sweeping victory within their grasp. They're learning that they don't. And for those of us who disagree with them, this is a good day.
On to martini number two now. And if Harry Reid played an unwitting role in the good martini, he's the star of the show in the bad martini. Yesterday, I'm sure most of you were aware that seven Marines were killed, others injured in a training accident at an ammunition depot in Hawthorne, Nevada. Tragic situation. In his floor statement, Harry Reid fully admitting that he has no idea why this tragedy happened. The Marines at that time had no idea why it happened. Nonetheless, Harry Reid here in these excerpts that we strung together saying that sequestration is to blame.
It's very important we continue training our military. So important. But one of the things in sequester is we cut back in training and maintenance. That's the way sequester was written. This sequester should go away. We've cut already huge amounts of money and deficit reduction. It's just not appropriate, Mr. President, that our military can't train and do the maintenance necessary. These men and women, our Marines, were training there in Hawthorne. And with the sequester, it's going to cut this stuff back.
Just about every rational American horrified and outraged by those comments. And guess who else was? Leaders in the Marine Corps. Here's NBC's Jim Miklaszewski with that reaction.
Now, I can tell you, Marine Corps officials this afternoon are taking a strong exception to what Harry Reid implied, saying that this exercise, for example, was planned well in advance, had nothing to do with the budget cuts. There were no corners cut. And if they couldn't afford to have all the safety precautions into place, they wouldn't do the exercise. And in fact, one Marine Corps one Marine Corps official told us a short time ago that he considers this nothing but pure political posturing on the backs of these dead Marines.
Can't say it any better than that, Jim.
On to the next martini. We've always known that Harry Reid was the guy who said George Romney was ashamed of his son. Apparently he conducted a seance or something. You know, he's the one who says tourists smell funny. I mean, he's just a jerk from top to bottom. And, we shouldn't be surprised by anything he says. The other thing is that, you know, our political debate now today is just, you know, when bad things happen, blame the opposition party. And, you know, after a while, there's just such a thing as a bridge too far. And this is what Harry Reid is all about. And it's, you know, you kind of marveled the Democrats keep him in charge in light of circumstances like this. So anyway, on the next one, Greg.
Do you want to say it or do you want me to say it?
Oh, way to go, Nevada. Way to go. I mean, imagine the crazy thing Sharon Angle would have said.
Right. All right. Anyway, on to martini number three now. And the president is in Israel. So clearly on Tuesday, you would think if he was going to do an interview, he's probably, you know, too busy preparing for this critical Middle Eastern trip. But if he's going to do an interview, it'd probably be in preview of the trip, perhaps the ongoing budgetary concerns between the two parties. No, the president did have some tough decisions to make, though, that he wanted to talk about. And here's what he had to say.
I think this will be close. I'm going Louisville. I know it's not a surprise pick, and I'm going with Indiana. These are the two best teams right now, and for the championship, I'm going back to the Big Ten. I think this is Indiana's year.
Well, that's a relief, Jim. We now know that he thinks the Hoosiers are going to win it all. We don't know how we're going to deal with our deficit problem or chemical weapons in Syria, but at least we know that he's got the Big Ten back on top.
You know, I'm going to quote the great wise Cameron Gray, one of the producers of NRA News, who tweeted not long ago, Greg, maybe if we put government programs and entitlements in bracket form, we could get the president, trick him into doing a budget. And then a couple other folks are saying, you know, you think about it. I think it was another guy said, look, create a sequester in the form of this. You know, if you're going through the brackets, what your priorities are. And if you get knocked out in the first round, sorry, you're among the first cuts of sequester and stuff like that. You know, there's some potential there.
I like that.
The only other thing I'll add is that there were a couple people who said this is one of the ways that Obama bonds with people who don't follow politics. And that if we on the right kind of feel like we need to get into the cultural game and we need to reach beyond our base, et cetera, that we really shouldn't make fun of this. I think we can, you know, walk and chew gum at the same time. We can start doing these things while kind of realizing that, an informed electorate, you should not your primary exposure to the president of the United States should not be through ESPN. You know, life has its lighter moments. There's nothing wrong with the president being interested in sports and talking about sports and stuff like that. But, you know, the fact that this has turned into such a, you know, major hyped event of the White House calendar indicates a bit about, you know, the state of our culture and how serious the you know, voting electorate is sometimes.
Well, I'm not one to you know, demean others for spending a lot of time on brackets. I'm a total March Madness junkie, but the difference is, Jim, I'm not president of the United States. I have some time to look over these picks and watch these games and know something about it because I enjoy it. I don't have the free world to lead.
As noted, you know, I'm not a big golfer, Greg, but you ever notice, does it ever seem like the president has more downtime than you do?
Oh, yeah. I haven't been golfing more than a couple times a year in forever.
There are PGA Tour members who don't golf as often as this president. So, you know. Maybe he filled out his brackets while he was on the flight over to Israel, and hopefully things are all together and he has a good week out there and things are kumbaya with Israel and such. But certainly is kind of interesting how much this president always manages to find time to do this. And, you know, the budget that was, you know, legally due a couple months ago, never quite, you know, still waiting for it. Apparently Godot was working on it.
Priorities, America. Priorities. Jim, have a great day. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us. Join us again on Thursday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.